About a month ago, Paul Crane told a gender about the quite stark findings of his second Isle of Man population atlas. The statistics showing a significantly aging population were bad enough in Mr. Crane's first population atlas, but the latest version tells an increasingly concerning tale. So what's to be done? Mr. Crane joins me now in the studio. We discussed a few weeks ago now about most of the chapters, and the general thrust was the people over 60 are the dependent people, the people who depend on the working population, are increasing, and the working population as a ratio is decreasing, which is a big concern. And what we didn't get onto was the final chapter about what the political implications of all this is. So I thought it was a good idea to get you back to talk about that.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah, very glad to be here. Yes, we'd covered chapters 1 to 8, which were really covering the demographic analysis of where the population of the Isle of Man is at. And we're looking now then at chapter 9, which is on interventions and policies. And I've deliberately set the book out so that those first 8 chapters are, I would say, are not really political at all. But in chapter 9, I'm trying to pick up on the issues and explore those. I haven't attempted to spell out what I think the solutions are. I've preferred to ask questions. So I've got a series of issues and then questions that come at the end of them. And within those, I think there's probably 4 conversations that I'd love to see running. We're in a period now where there's another census later on this month, an election for the Keys coming up in September, and then the results of the census coming after that. And so it is going to be a time when some rethinking on population is possible, and I'm keen for some conversations to take place.
And the sorts of conversations, I mean, it can't be a coincidence that one of the first pages of your Chapter 9, Interventions and Policies, has 2 headlines: Government Backpedals on Population and Face Reality on Population Growth. These are two headlines from the Isle of Man Courier, one from 2022, the other 2024. I guess that gives us some of an insight into what you're thinking.
Yes, I effectively, I've been in Legislative Council now for over 4 years, and enjoyed the process that we went through at that early stage where we were setting out the island plan and the economic strategy going hand in hand. And within that, demography had a role. So there was a suggestion in the draft of the economic strategy that we grow the population to 100,000. And that quickly became controversial, I think. So there was a consultation that took place on that very soon after the draft document was put together. And the reaction in the consultation, the figure that sticks in my head is that 28% of respondents thought that growing the population 100,000 was not important at all. You know, so it was dropped. And that's what those headlines refer to. So growing the population as an ambition in its own right disappeared, and in its place was put developing our infrastructure, all elements of it, to handle a bigger population, perhaps of 100,000. That was there. There remained a commitment to growing the working population by 5,000, and that is still in place and progress being made. So, yeah, this is about the issue of what are we trying to achieve with population, and for me, I'm on the side that what we're trying to do with the population is about building a better community here in the Isle of Man. It's not about feeding the economy, you know, although I recognise that the population growth and economic growth go hand in hand, of course. But surprisingly, we don't have what I would call a comprehensive population policy, despite the fact that demography is so important to the Isle of Man. We don't have that. And I think I understand why some people are not looking for that. politics is more complex than I thought it was when I entered Legislative Council 4 years ago. And I think there may be some preference for doing a series of small steps rather than a big step. So what could be called an iterative process, iteration, repetition. Mm. So plan, do, review process sort of thing, if you like, that we look at what we're trying to achieve instead of trying to state the big picture and, 20 years
and actually,
hence.
Actually, that's a more radical suggestion than perhaps you might think, because we don't tend to do that as governments. I'll include the three governments I was part of. There wasn't enough, in my view anyway, of creating the vision of yeah. what is it that you actually yeah. want from society. It was more about, well, we've got to keep feeding the economy, because if we don't keep feeding the economy, we will not be able to afford all the services that yeah. we currently have. And anyone in politics will tell you that it's easy to introduce a service and all but impossible to cut it once it's been introduced. Yeah. So that vision of what the Isle of Man should look like in the future, what is it that we all want, yeah. is quite a hard thing to pin down.
I think even asking the hard question actually is a major starting point, and that's where I don't think that's just a sort of one-way question. For instance, one of the things I point out in the book, I've used a number of epigraphs at the start of chapters, just as starters, and there's one that I quoted from the Select Committee on Population Rebalancing, which was about the number of people who seem to say we want the population to stay the same. You know, there were some social attitude surveys, I think 2018, 2019, and the feeling in those was they want the population to stay the same. And the population has stayed the same in one sense, in the sense that the next census will perhaps show we've only got 500 people more maybe than we had in 2011. Mm. So the population has stayed the same.
But given which is extraordinary, isn't it? Because if you go back 60 years, yeah. We had a population of about 40,000. Yeah. And then up till 10 years ago, that had been significantly increasing yeah, to a yes. point where it had doubled.
Absolutely.
And perhaps the economic activity associated with that has funded a more lavish lifestyle than yeah. perhaps we could reasonably afford if yeah. it was a more stable population. And that appears to be what's being borne out now over the last 10 years.
Okay. The problem comes with this population staying the same. Okay, the population stayed the same, about 84,000, 85,000. But in another sense, it is totally changed. It's got much older. In those 15 years when the population stayed the same, the births have dropped 45%. You know, so this is it stayed the same, but it's radically different. And given population dynamics, aiming for the population to stay the same is potentially disastrous. You know, so you have to be more aware than that. You know, and so we have these problems still at the moment. We are seeing reduced births. We are seeing the more of our younger adults, 2024 especially, moving out than coming in. And that's not just going to university, because they're still counted as resident here if they're at university. And we're seeing more over the age of 65, which has some benefits and it has some problems. But as an economy, it's not helpful to have those sort of dependency ratios where you've got a very large older population. And so this is where, we've got some issues to address, and being clear about what we're trying to address, and having a conversation that helps people to see this. Because if you're still stuck at saying I want the population to stay the same, you're not thinking about the structure of the population, you're just thinking about the total number, you know. So there needs to be a better understanding really of that. And I don't say that sort of arrogantly or facetiously, you know, I've studied this for years.
Well, no, I mean, it's an enormously complicated thing yeah. to do. And of course, the more government interventions in relation to policy is the less popular the government's going to be, because generally speaking, on the one hand, people don't want the population to grow, but on the other hand, they don't want government interfering with their day-to-day lives.
But they do want a stronger economy that they benefit from. Mm. And all of these are interlinked, of course. So the first of the conversations, as it were, that I want to see happening is a conversation about what we're trying to achieve for population. We've got these ambitions that are in the economic strategy at the moment. They relate to the island plan, but they tend to come under the heading of developing the economy, not building better communities. And for me, they're at least in both camps, but preferably building better communities. Mm. So that's where I would come from on this. I think that building better communities, a more balanced population, and I sometimes get asked, what do you mean by balance? But let's just shelve that for now. And building a more balanced population will bring economic benefits, you know, but we're not setting out just to bring people here because they're economic tools, you know.
And I suppose the sort of thing that you mean is building a community across the island that is affordable for people who are, at an early stage in their careers, or even kind of mid career.
Yeah.
The Isle of Man, generally speaking, compared with the UK in particular, which is where most people would be doing their comparisons. You know, young people from the Isle of Man prefer to live and work in the UK because actually it's cheaper to do so.
Well, that gets mixed, of course, because, you know, I'm aware of many young people from the Isle of Man who've stayed away after they've been to university, but many of them have gravitated to London, where they're not going down for cheap cost of living, you know, in a London basis, but they're perhaps looking for other things. But, I think having some idea of what we would hope to achieve will perhaps clarify what buttons we might want to press to try and move us in that direction. So that's the first of the conversations, if you like. The second of the conversations...
And, well, before we move off one then, I mean, how do we start that conversation? Because most of the MHKs, budding MHKs, will be wanting to show their credentials come the election time, and they'll be telling everyone all the wonderful ideas they have for growing the economy, I don't know. I'm not sure how popular, having been on the doorstep, and as indeed you have on a couple of occasions, four or five elections, five elections, I think I've forced four keys to one local authority. And actually, that big picture vision thing isn't necessarily top of most people's agendas.
Yeah, I would agree with that. On the other hand, you will find people who express their views about what the population should be. You know, as I say, some of them are saying keep it the same, you know, without an awareness. You say, how do you start that conversation? Well, I've written a book, so I've made a contribution. I would encourage all those who are thinking of standing in the Keys election, I would encourage them to get the book. And I don't say that because I make any profit from this. I don't, you know, I'm selling it to the shops for what it's costing me to print it. So it's a not-for-profit enterprise for me, but I'm keen for the ideas to have reach, you know. So I would encourage people to look at that. But yes, it is going to need something more formal than that to trigger some of these conversations. So, I'm keen to see that happen, really.
Mm-hmm. The next conversation, then.
Okay, the next conversation out of these four would perhaps be about migration. And I'm not the first voice to be saying we need a conversation about migration. I know that Maria Brideson from Brideson Holsall. She has been raising issues. She's very much these days, I think it's fair to say, an immigration lawyer. That's been a specialism. And we've been through a period, especially when there were legislative changes in 2018 and in the following years, where we've got our own migrant worker visas, particularly for a short time. We had the seasonal worker visa, and that always struck me as a step too far. You know, if you stop and saying, what are we trying to achieve? And if you're looking for building better communities, having a visa system that lets people live here for 9 months and they have to go away again, that's not, for me anyway, building a better community. You know, it just isn't.
And I suppose the seasonal work that, you know, that kind of visa used to be for is becoming much less a frequent thing. I mean, I suppose that you've still got a need in the fishing industry and possibly some farming.
Hospitality and other areas like that.
But on the whole, that hospitality sector isn't as big a thing as it used to be.
Although it still has recruitment issues, I think. But the seasonal worker visa was stopped, you know, stopped within months of it starting, really, because of abuses, you know. We had a good report produced for a Timwell session. There was the Cabinet Office were looking at the incentives and disincentives of migration. We had several appendices, one of which was about the immigration gap between the type of immigration to the UK and the controls, regulations there, and the Isle of Man system. And we were this is what led, in a sense, to the issues we've had relating to criminality, to modern-day slavery, to a series of exploitations and so on, hugely regrettable. And part of the picture now is that the visa regulations are being tightened up over a three-year period, and it'll take that long to sort of get through it. But we have been through a difficult period. What has changed, though, is that we've also, of course, been through Brexit and then through the economic crisis, as it was called, financial crisis. And these are still impacting on the Isle of Man. But it does mean that when we have an economy that's short of workers and we're looking to bring in workers from outside, we're not getting them in such large numbers from within the UK, certainly not getting them from Europe as we were. The sources from Eastern Europe, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania were strong for a time. Now they're coming from further afield to that. And this, in a sense, is part of the big picture of what Brexit achieved in the UK and here too. I think the census coming up later this month, I think that will show greater racial diversity, and I've no problem with that. You know, some lovely people come in and say it's fascinating to meet some people, and greater religious diversity. And again, I've no problem with that. You know, the Isle of Man at the 2021 census, the people living here were born in 172 different countries, but we were over 94% white, and that's you know, the balance of that is interesting.
Is the conversation just to recognise that some form of immigration has to happen?
It does mean that we've to have recognition that immigration is needed, particularly in relation to our existing population profile. You know, we need workers. Our economic development is being held back because of a shortage of workers. You know, recruitment is difficult. I went to the graduate fair at the Villa Marina a couple of weeks ago, and every employer I talked to was there looking to recruit. You know, they were having difficulties right across sectors, really. It was interesting to see that. So we do need some movement in. And we have to look at how we incentivize that, which is why the Office of Council of Ministers have been looking at having incentives and disincentives in Cabinet Office, incentives and disincentives for migration, and looking at what that means. What we're not getting a lot of at the moment is retirement migration. That may have changed in the last 12 months, and the new census will show if that's the case, but we haven't been getting many people moving in over the age of 65. So we are getting younger people. The people who move here are younger than the people who are already here, and that's one of the benefits of migration.
Yeah. And then the next conversation, I guess, looking at your chapter 9, would that be about births?
Well, births is part of the big picture, and The bit that I'm most interested in within that is the concept of pronatalism, which many of the leading demographers are now leaning towards. And pronatalism has a nasty history, if you like, because you tend to think of Ceausescu and Mussolini and Hitler or whatever on pronatalist policies, or even Deng Xiaoping. But the sort of pronatalism that's being talked about now is the births issue in the Isle of Man is not just in the Isle of Man. You know, when people say it's about the cost of housing, if that was true, then we wouldn't be seeing births plummet almost globally, you know.
And actually, you know, you look at, or you talk to people who are, or couples of childbearing age, and part of the conversation is there's so much trouble and uncertainty in the world, whether that be climate change, the various wars that seem to be raging, and I don't know whether that's got the wars have got any worse, or whether our ability to find out about them has got much easier. And that seems to be scaring people, and they're thinking, well, actually, do I particularly want to bring children into this world?
That's undoubtedly part of the picture. It's a complicated picture because there are many, many parts to it, and I've tried to sort of outline that in Chapter 3 on births. But this issue of pronatalism, if we do not want... I mean, the future that is spelt out in the book is that the trends that are happening at the moment, the world has already packed peak birth. It's going to pass peak population this century. And then, given the extent to which births are falling, the expectation is that the world population is going to fall. And when I say fall, some projections are saying it'll drop from the current 8.2 billion to 2 billion in 300 years. So this is a remarkable fall. And some people say, great, that'll solve the climate change problem. But others say, gosh, the economics of that, the world population is slowing down like that, what companies are going to have to go bust because the competition just can't survive and getting workers, and the population will not only go down, it'll age. So some of the leading demographers at the moment say we have to find ways to stabilize this. We can do it sort of thing, but we don't know how. So I think we're going to enter a period of stabilization. We'll see that happening a lot. And pronatalism is about having a society and a government that has as its highest priority the procreation of future population, you know, because the alternative to it is really not good. You know, the Earth could cope with a little bit of population decline, perhaps, but on that scale, at that speed, no, that's really problematic. So,
and yet that the population increase to the levels that we see now has happened in a relatively short period of time. I mean, it's a similar period, isn't it?
Absolutely,
a few hundred years.
When you see the graphs that have been produced in this, there's much talk about the spike. So the spike is population has rocketed from 1700s, got faster and faster. You know, when I was born, fewer than 4 billion people here. There are now over 8 billion people. So the rise has been very rapid, and it'll go down, the line will practically reverse, you know, and most of the world now has below replacement level births. So it's not just something in the future, it's what will happen if we carry on the trend we're on, you know. So unless we stabilize births, we've got this change coming. So talking about pronatalism would be a key one. And then the fourth conversation would be about housing, really, because that is such a local part of what we've got here.
And housing, of course, is something that that every politician who stood in the last election thought was a brilliant idea, and yes, we need to do a lot more for. And yet, after 5 years, there are plenty of people who would wonder what has actually been achieved.
Well, one of the difficulties with housing is that it's absolutely associated with the issue of intergenerational fairness. You know, it's said that the millennial age group, or the millennial generation, they're the first generation to do less well economically than their parents. When I talk to young people, they instantly recognise that. When I talk to older people, they deny it. But there was a report out last week saying 55% of the houses in the UK are owned by baby boomer generation. You know, 55% of the houses. And it's a reminder that many of our young people cannot access the housing market, are stuck with renting. In the Isle of Man, the number of social houses, as a percentage, social housing has declined between 2001 and 2021. There were 300, just 300 more houses for a population 7,000 higher. So social housing here has not been happening. Therefore, the younger generations are renting privately and raising issues about landlords. And there's a section in the book that covers the work of the Tynwald Youth Select Committee and their report on housing. And it makes some very interesting reading. We need to listen to what our young people are saying on this.
Well, believe it or not, that's almost us out of time. So basically, anyone wanting to get a copy of the Isle of Man Population Atlas needs to go where?
Well, it's for sale in the Bridge bookshops in Ramsey and Port Erin. It's available in the House of Manannan. It's available in the Book Company. It's available in T.G. Jones in Douglas. So all of those places, yeah.
Well, Paul Crane, thank you very much for collating this wonderful Isle of Man Population Atlas Volume 2.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.
That was MLC and geographer Paul Crane. So what do you think? The statistics point to an increasingly worrying picture, but is anyone other than Mr. Crane taking this seriously? Have we been so focused on growing the economy and improving services that we've lost sight of what we want the Isle of Man to be like in the future? What sort of future do you want? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and please get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Gwna mai os yn geisio chrwm. Thanks for listening.